You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today, I'm going to review a number of stories instead of focusing on just one. I really wanted to get a sense of the American people, where public opinion is at. And one way to get a handle on that is to look at various Gallup polls that they periodically publish and give some YouTube videos. And for those that are new to the show, the way you listen to my show as well as get my notes for the show is to go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, P-R-O-N-K, .wordpress.com. And at the very top, you'll have links to the most recent 60 to 80 shows. And at the very bottom of the page, you'll have links to all my past shows, except for some of the earlier ones that were unfortunately overwritten. But in between, and this is important, I give you a lot of my information that I've looked at in preparing the show. And that includes articles I've read, as well as YouTube videos, sometimes charts, graphs, photos, whatever is of interest to me in developing my comments or opinions on various subjects. And I was interested in, first, the ranking of the institutions, American institutions, in particular Congress. It wasn't too long ago, several weeks ago, that Congress hit a record low of confidence of the American people of only 7%. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, single digit 7%. Now, that number has never been high. It's bounced around. I think the highest, if memory serves, is 40%, but that was many years ago. But the number does bounce around, and the most recent number is 14%, so at least it's doubled, but it's still very, very low. Also hitting a new low is confidence in the media, and this has also hit a new low. And I have links to and excerpts from that Gallup poll, and I didn't lock in my mind what the number was, and I'm quickly scrolling down. It's at a 14-year, well, it depends, and this is important, especially about the media. The opinions on the media, when they survey, they ask whether you're a Republican, Democrat, or Independent, and the answer you get as to whether or not you have confidence or trust in the media is really largely a function of your political party, because the Democratic Party is largely liberal or progressive, and they tend to give more trust to the media. Conversely, conservatives, Republicans give less trust, and independents are somewhat in the middle. But what's happened over time is that the American people are turning off media. Why? And this is important. Why is suddenly the media, and it's not suddenly, this has been going on for years. Why did it drop so suddenly? The reason is, and again, it's largely your political affiliation. There are other sources of information. In other words, you have the internet. You have the internet, and you can go online and find information on subjects that are interest to you. So, and that's what I do. And I think a lot of people do that. In other words, they don't listen to, for example, the nightly news. I haven't listened to the nightly news in decades. I can't even remember when it was the last time. Now, occasionally I'll get excerpts of a newscast on YouTube, and it's really just a story. I might be interested in a specific story, and I'll see what CBS or ABC or NBC is saying. But that's the extent. I simply don't trust the media because it is biased. There have been repeated surveys of the media, and over 90% are liberal and Democrat. Now, I know some of you are saying, well, what about Fox? Well, Fox definitely has a slight, and I would say a slight, right of center bias, but it's certainly not in my mind. It's certainly not libertarian. And on several issues that conservatives have strong views on, such as illegal immigration, it's on the other side of that issue, largely because its owner is Rupert Murdoch. And conservatives are more or less warned, don't get on this subject. So the trust in the media has hit a new low, and I'm looking at the numbers. The previous low was 40%, but it's been edging downwards from much higher levels in the 1990s and the early 2000s, the turn of the century. And right now, and this is sort of annoying, it's not jumping out. Among Democrats, trust in the media is a 14-year low, and it dropped to 54% in 19, excuse me, it dropped to a 14-year low of 54% in 2014. However, amongst Republicans, and here's the point, amongst Republicans, the trust is 27%. That's one percentage above its all-time low of 26%. While independents are sort of in the middle, they're about 38%. And that's 1 point above the 37% in 2013. So here's the key point, and here's the takeaway. Whether you listen to the news or not, your opinion is very much influenced based on your party affiliation. But over time, the monopoly that the three major networks have has been eroded not only by Fox, but I think more importantly, by the fact that today, especially with, and I'm on a college campus, but this is all over the United States, you've seen it, people walking, looking at their phone, either an iPhone or whatever phone they have. And sometimes it's disturbing because they'll walk into a tree or somebody else. But all I'm seeing on campus, with few exceptions, people are either looking at their computer or their laptop or their iPhone or a mini computer. And a lot of them are not reading. That's the other thing I know. They're reading, but they're not reading books. They're not reading papers. And they're obviously not in front of a television set. So they're looking for information on what they're interested in, and most of them simply are not interested in the news, and one of the reasons is they simply don't trust them. So if you don't trust someone, you don't really want to listen to them. And that, I think, is the president's problem. Over time, more and more people have learned you can't trust this president. He will look straight in the camera and lie to you. And this is especially true if you follow politics. Now, only a small minority of people, less than 10% of the U.S. population, actually follows politics. Most people don't follow politics, and that's important because it's important to the politicians, and they understand that most people simply are not keeping track of what they say, so they will say nearly anything to support their position, even if it contradicts the reality of the situation or their previous held position. It's the people that, such as me, but there are other people that are interested in what's happening to the country, what's happening to the economy, what's happening in foreign affairs, that are more or less on top of the situation and know when they're being either deliberately misled or lied to. So what's happened is people over time have trust the media less and less. And that it doesn't make any difference what your party affiliation is, other than because the press is primarily liberal, and I'm talking your television networks, the radio, the top of the hour newscast you hear, as well as print, your newspapers. Less and less people are trusting them. And instead, what they're doing, if they're interested in a certain subject matter, for example, yesterday I gave a short commentary on the outbreak of Ebola in Western Africa, in the countries of Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone, Senegal, and Nigeria. And I need to make an update. There are over 5,000 cases of people that are suspected of having Ebola, and there have been over 2,500 deaths. So the mortality rate is about 50%. In past outbreaks, the mortality rate is typically between 50 and 90%. So this one is actually on the low side. It's in the 50%, but I think we're in the early stages. And what is very much different from the past time, it's not in rural areas where the death rates were in the hundreds. What's unique about that outbreak is it's in multiple countries, in primarily West Africa along the coast, and the numbers are in the thousands. They're not in the hundreds. And based on experts in this area, that's just the beginning. And we'll probably see tens of thousands of deaths. You know, one scenario is somewhere between 77,000 and 277,000 by the end of the year. So this is something I point out. Now, why I'm using that as an example. If you're interested in what's happening in West Africa, but in particular the Ebola breakout of the disease, you can go online and find articles, YouTube videos, news reports, commentary, and yes, even my humble commentary of yesterday was rather short. I think it was a 15-minute show. Usually, I try for at least 45 minutes to an hour, but I have been a little under the weather, so I cut it short yesterday. I'm trying to get back to my hour program or more. I'm really at the 4 to 5 time slot in the afternoon, and usually they're trying to close the studio at 5. So I need to get here on time and do a whole hour show, and I hope to do that, especially tomorrow and Friday. But the point I'm making is, especially with the invention of the internet 25 years ago, we celebrated the 25th anniversary last April, and we have today, according to people that follow the numbers on this, and I have a short article on this, there are over 1 billion websites. Now remember, the population of the world is over 7 billion, but we've passed a major milestone, and it took 25 years, but now we're over 1 billion websites. Now that means there's probably at least, and this is just a guess on my part, about 500 million people that actually have websites, and I say that because I have multiple websites. I have at least 10, maybe even 12, I've sort of lost count, that I've published. And that's not necessarily unusual. Usually businesses have their own websites. Some get a lot of traffic, some get very little traffic. It really depends what you're trying to accomplish and how persistent you're at. And the name of the game is to publish, ideally, every day, and you'll build traffic. You could put up a website today, unless you have something very, very unique, you're not going to get much traffic. It takes time. And there's some tricks about getting traffic, but I'm not getting into that. My point being is this. Today, we have a wealth of information. Some would say a glut of information. So people, their time is valuable. They have a limited amount of time, attention span. So they're going to go to websites that they're specifically interested in. It could be politics. It could be diseases like Ebola. It could be what's happening in the Middle East. It could be games, or they're interested in buying some goods, so they look for online businesses that sell goods and even services online. And because of that, there's more and more competition, which I think is terrific, and that offers more choice. Competition leads to more choice. It should lead to more quality as well as lower prices. So I'm all for competition. I'm enthusiastic about the fact that we're now over a billion sites, but I think we're just beginning. I think we're really going to take off because now you have the software, the hardware, but what really rules on the internet is the content. And the quality of content will go up, up, and up. And unfortunately, what's happened in both the newspapers and in broadcasting, they're a shrinking industry. Papers have laid off. A lot of papers have closed down. More and more papers have laid off a significant amount of their staff. There's a lot less investigative journalism in the sense of being part of a newspaper doing it. In other words, where you used to have bureaus in major cities as well as abroad, a lot of that has gone away. And I've seen it, really, for example, on campus. We have a newspaper, a paper version of a college newspaper. It's usually 8 to 12 pages, sometimes 16, but usually 8 to 12. And at least two of those pages, sometimes three, are advertising. So it's not a big paper, And after the writers have written their stories, the editors have made changes to it, it's been corrected, the copy editor is done. In other words, it's ready to be put in the paper. The students spend probably at least 20 to 30 hours publishing that paper. And it's distributed every Tuesday on campus. We have stands that the students can go to. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning this, you can put out that same newspaper, if you know what you're doing, in an hour's time on the web. And that really got my attention because this is just a small college paper with students volunteering their time, putting a lot of time and effort into it. But it's legacy, folks. This is the old way of doing it. The old way of doing it. For example, I was preparing for this show, and I type in, you know, certain search words in Google, and one of it was to a Wall Street Journal article. Now, I used to be a regular, I mean daily, reader of the Wall Street Journal. I don't do that anymore. I haven't really looked at a paper in years. I'd have to think how long it's been, but it's been at least 10. And that's the reflection of the declining readership of newspapers throughout the country. Another example, I used to every Sunday buy the Dallas Morning News. I think when I was buying it, it was 75 cents. And it was usually thick. It was usually 3 or 4 inches thick. The Sunday edition that you could get Saturday afternoon. So you go grocery shopping, you could pick up your Dallas Morning News. And I only picked it up to read certain sections of it. I usually wasn't interested in the advertising, wasn't interested in the sports. There are whole sections of that paper that I wasn't interested in. Other sections I was. And that's most readers. I would say that's almost all readers. We have everyone's an individual. Everyone has their interests, their passions. Now today, the last time I looked, I didn't buy it. The paper was the Sunday edition, I think, was $3. And it was maybe 2 inches thick if it was that. I didn't buy it. And I haven't bought the Dallas Morning News for, again, at least 10 years. And even when I was buying it, I wouldn't buy the daily edition. So what is that a reflection of? Multiply that by tens of millions of Americans. People are simply not reading newspapers anymore. It's not that they're not being published. They are being published. And the successful ones have made the transition to the web. Now, many of them still will publish their paper versions like this college. But it's very time consuming to do that. You can do it really about less than 10% of the time to do it on the web versus trying to do it in a paper version. Call it economies of scale. What it is we've had a change of technology. And what's real attractive, once the story is done, it could be published then. You don't have to wait for a week if you're a weekly, or the end of the day if you're a daily, or even if you're a morning or afternoon paper. You can publish it when the story is done. And once it's published online, you and your editor can look at it and make any last-minute corrections or updates. So this is revolutionary. And people can search online, really across the entire world, and if they're interested in what you're publishing, read your article for free. And that's key, for free. Now, is it really for free? No, because where you go, for example, I usually have several videos that I publish on what I'm ever going to be talking about. And I go to YouTube. There's advertising on YouTube. There's advertising on my blogs. Now, I don't earn a cent from those ads, but they're very, very few. They're at the bottom. And if I wanted to pay them money, I could get it so there's no ads. I don't really care because I know that people go to blogs for the content. In other words, most people that today are looking at an article, a video, or any blog or going to a website, how do they get to that site? Invariably, overwhelmingly, they've typed in some keywords into a search engine. And then they'll get the results. Now, Google is a popular search engine, so is Bing, but there are others, and there's some competition there still, believe it or not. So you can go and search for material, and you can be specific. You can search for images. You can search for videos. You can search for articles, websites. That's the power of this technology. It gives a lot of freedom, a lot of choice, and a lot more information than, for example, 50 years ago, where you really had your three major networks and your city usually had one, maybe two papers, Some had three, depending if it's a large city and you had some competition. Now you don't, because you've had consolidation in the media business where you have five large corporations controlling a large percentage of the media, but they don't have really control in the sense that most people are doing what I'm doing. I'm going to a search engine and typing some keywords to get relevant articles on what I'm interested in. And if I'm interested in videos, for example, I'll go to YouTube. Sometimes I'll go elsewhere. I will say, and that's maybe a mistake on my part, but I go to YouTube and see what's available on YouTube. I'll go to Bing.com, for example, for images. I also can go to Google if I can't find the images. People have a much wider choice as to how they can quench, if you will, their thirst for information or knowledge on a subject that is of interest to them. So that's one of the reasons why I think you're seeing the decline in confidence of institutions such as the media and such as Congress, because people can search out and see, what did the president say? Is he consistent? And I think the politicians slowly but surely are waking up to that. They're increasingly being caught out misleading, manipulating, lying to the American people. And my experience, I seldom give liars a second chance. If I see some, and I'm not talking white lies or minor lies, I'm talking major misrepresentations of the truth. When I catch someone doing that, I usually will never listen to them. I don't want to be around them. I don't want to talk to them. I cut them off. And I think that's what's happening with the American people and a public opinion. The American people are cutting off politicians of both parties, whether in the House and the Senate or the president or even locally. They know they're being manipulated. They know they're being lied to. They know that their own interest and concern simply is not being looked after. And they've had it up to here. So it doesn't surprise me that in terms of institutions, Congress, as well as the presidency, as well as the media, their rankings have gone down, down, and down. News. This is fairly recent. Newspapers, in terms of trust or confidence, was at 22%. Organized labor was also at 22%. Big business was at 21%. And this poll was when Congress was at 7%. And what about television news? They were at 18%. Ladies and gentlemen, that's terrible. That's outrageous. That means, for example, take Congress. Today it's up to 14%. Only 14% of the American people either have a great deal or quite a lot of confidence in Congress. The rest don't. Now you might be asking, well, who do they trust? Who do they have confidence in? And all these numbers are going to vary from week to week, month to month, year to year. But rather consistently, there have been three or four institutions that the American people have a lot of confidence in. Who are they? Number one today is the military. In this poll, they had 74%, so they had a great deal and quite a lot of confidence in the military. It's been higher, and it's definitely been lower, but it's always been higher than Congress, the newspapers, television networks, and large businesses. Who's second? And this might surprise you. This does not surprise me. It's small business. 62% of the American people have a great deal and a quite a lot of confidence in small businesses. The reason it doesn't surprise me, small businesses know they need to compete. They have a lot of competition, both locally and nationally, and they need to really be honest and serve the needs of their customers and clients. And if they do that, they will succeed. And if they don't, they'll lose customers and their business will go down the tubes. So I'm not surprised that small businesses, in terms of the American people, there's a lot of confidence in small businesses. Now, the third institution, and I think this varies from city to city, I need to say. These are national numbers. Need to put this in context. 53% have a great deal or quite a lot of confidence in the police. Law enforcement. But that's not good. That's about 50-50. In other words, half do and half don't. Now, falling under 50, is the church or organized religion at 45%. Those are the top four. All the rest are under 40%. The church is at 45%. So those are your top four institutions. And what the Gallup poll periodically does is poll the American people, and they ask them questions as to, you know, which institution they have the most confidence in. And this poll, I think it had 17 institutions. But falling to the bottom is Congress, the television networks, big business, newspapers. Now, I've just noticed something, and this is important, and I agree with this as well. News on the internet. You got to be very, very careful when you go on the internet. While the internet is a great tool to gather a lot of information quickly on a subject, you have to consider the source. Because a lot of it is not edited, and it has varying quality. Some is very, very good. Some is atrocious, and other is pure propaganda. People have an agenda, and they use the web to push their agenda. So you got to be careful. And I think most people understand that. But what's interesting is news on the internet ranks higher just a little bit than television news, and definitely higher than Congress. So why you need to be careful about news and commentary on the internet when you go search it, it doesn't mean it's, I mean, they're in the same league, if you will, as Congress, our politicians, our television news, and just a little bit below newspapers. Newspapers rank a little bit higher. And the reason why, I think, because people are aware they do have editors that review it. Even college newspapers have editors, something we call them advisors here. I call it the adult supervision that review it, because it's a learning opportunity for students to become better writers, and you become better writers by getting several inputs from editors that show you how you can make your news story or opinion piece better. And that's an opportunity I encourage any student to take advantage of, because my experience is, especially I would say on most college campuses, there is a large percentage of the people that are going to college today that, quite frankly, are not reading at college level. Many of them are semi-illiterate, can't really read and can't really write, and they're never going to get a college degree. It's sad, but that's just the reality, and you see that on so-called community colleges or junior colleges. Just a lot, because they have more or less open enrollment, and even though they might have a high school diploma, that doesn't mean they're reading and writing at the 12th grade level. Most of them, I've seen some of them. It's at 8th grade if it's at that. And what happens is they invariably drop out, because any course you take today on colleges, you got to be able to read. And if you can't read, there's no way you're going to succeed. And it's sad. And a lot of money is being wasted, and a lot of time is being wasted. And they have tons of these developmental courses that are supposedly remedial courses to get people that should have learned a lot in 12 years, in 16 weeks, get them back up to speed. And if you talk to the instructors of these courses or read books on it, most of the students fail, because there's no way they can get in 16 weeks what they should have gotten over 12 years. And that's the dirty little secret about community colleges. And that's the reason the graduation rate, for example, at DCCD, the Dallas County Community College District, is less than 25% completion in terms of either degree or certification problem. And I think the problem can be directly traced to the ability to read and write. They simply don't have the level of ability to read and write at a college level. They're significantly, many of them, they're not even at high school level. And that's the problem. Now, that's the problem. Now, what is the, that's a detour. I'm trying to think, how did I get on this? My point is this. Individuals today have a wealth of choice as to the information they gather. And what's terrific about the internet, you decide what you're interested in, as opposed to going home, watching a television show or a newscast or newspaper where they tell you this is what you should be interested in. And this is our take on it. Well, now you decide what you're interested in and find articles, videos, whatever, photos, charts, podcasts, video casts. People have blogs, podcasts. I have a like my blog. You can click on the links at the top and listen to my shows. That's what people are doing all over the world. You have literally billions of people with access to the internet. Not everybody does, but most do, especially in the so-called developed world, you know, in Europe, North America, where you have an economy, where you have the internet. It's revolutionary. And what I see happening over time is a lot of college education will be given over the internet. It already is. We have courses, but no one has really put it together. You know, I've really thought about this. If you know, if you look at most colleges, both two-year and four-year colleges, and I'm going to confine it to the United States because I'm sure there's differences in other countries. The way it's broken down, by departments, and every department usually has typically 8 to 10, maybe 12 courses that they teach. Obviously, the more senior institutions, 4 years with large endowments, can have more courses, more professors. But you typically have, I would say on the low side, maybe 6 courses, on the high side, 12. Some will have more, some might even have less. But every department has their bread and butter courses. For example, if you're interested in science, let's say you're interested in geology, you're going to have your two basic courses in physical geology and historical geology. Now, those are your first two courses. Now, there are other courses you can take, but those are your introductory courses. The same thing in the social sciences. With economics, you'll have an introduction to microeconomics, then an introduction to macroeconomics. And if you're interested in it and want to continue it, you usually have intermediate micro and macroeconomics. And then you can take additional courses such as econometrics, economic history, labor economics, monetary economics. You have, in most colleges today, between 6 and 12 courses per department, and you have usually over 100 departments. But you can do the math. Multiply the number of courses by the departments. All of this could be put on and is being gradually put on the internet. So you could take a course online. I've taken many courses online where I never see the professor. But you need to be self-disciplined because you're going to be getting an assignment. You got to do the reading and you take the test online. There have been at least half a dozen courses I've taken where I've never met the professor. All the courses, the syllabus was online, the assignments were online, and you also have to prepare papers and submit them, and they're handed back, and your grades are online. But what I'm suggesting is, and taking a step further, not everyone can afford going to your better institutions, especially if you don't live in, let's say, the United States or Europe. And even if you do, you cannot afford it. And scholarships simply aren't available because they're rather selective. So where I see university education going is, and it's going to take some innovation here, is find the best presenters of the course material and have videos online. And this is already being done, by the way. You have several major universities, MIT, Yale, Berkeley, the University of California at Berkeley, but there are other universities that are doing it. What they do is they take their best professors and they present the course online. Now, here's the problem I see, and I am somewhat straying, but I'll bring this back in a second. You need to package it because not everyone can go to Yale, MIT, Berkeley, New York University, whatever school. Some of the large research institutions typically do this. There's only a limited number, either graduate students or undergraduates that can go to those schools. But there are many thousands, tens of thousands of students that would love to hear outstanding professors present the material that they have to take, as opposed to a local professor that simply might not be as good, either in presenting the material or knowledgeable about the material. So what you can have is the best presenters presenting the course. You can have online textbooks that you can read, because if you haven't been to college lately, textbook prices are skyrocketing. But the step is anyone around the world can enroll in the course and take the test and ultimately get a degree. That has not really been totally put together. And that's where I see really innovation and a revolution happening, because that means anyone in the world can get an outstanding education online and not physically go to that universe, go to that country, go to that university. And it's not just the best in the United States, it's best worldwide. That's where I see going. And it takes leadership, it takes money, it takes vision, it takes courage, and there are opportunities. And that gets to my last point. Where you have opportunities, you have people that see the opportunities and make it happen. And if they're successful, they become very, very wealthy. They become billionaires. And we've had a record number of billionaires. And I have the article. I'm looking at the clock. I don't have much time left. There have been 57 new American billionaires created. There was a 7% increase in the number. And they're over, I'm looking at, oh, here. The number of, they're over 2,000. Yes, there are 2,325 billionaires in the world. And a lot of them come from the United States. Because the wealth in the United States, the reason why the United States is so successful, we've had the freedom, really up to now, to compete. If you have a better mousetrap or a better idea for a business, you can compete, and the web makes it possible for more and more people to compete, because people can buy goods and services over the web. But you need the infrastructure, you need the software, you need the hardware, and it's coming together, folks. It is coming together, and you're seeing a convergence. And that's a great opportunity. So you have competition leading to choice. And the consumers have a lot of choice. It's consumer sovereignty leading to more jobs, more wealth, more income, and more educated people and more prosperous people and higher standards of living. And for those that take that initiative and make it happen, they can become billionaires. And that's why the United States has the largest number. So there are numbers of things going on. Some of it's rather negative. Some of it's rather positive. And I'll be honest, the economy is stagnating. And that's the one thing I don't have time to get into. Consumer confidence has really, it's been in negative territory. Gallup has a poll, and it's minus 16, but it used to be like minus 50. Or even lower during the bottom of the recession in 2009. So consumer confidence has really been fluctuating in a rather narrow band, but it's not positive at all. And that's the problem, because we're very much on a tipping point, and consumer confidence is not shooting up. It's still in negative territory. And probably next show, I'll get into what the Federal Reserve is doing, because they're going to stop buying bonds, government bonds, next month, and they're going to start thinking about changing their zero-rate interest policy. With that, I'd like to play my closing music. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College.